Chapter 40 Archaeology Today and Tomorrow. Imagine a swampy landscape with a few ridges and low hills, crossed by streams and rivers. Now imagine it 9,000 years ago, with a dugout canoe making its way through a narrow channel in the tall reeds. A strong wind carrying drizzle gusts above, but the black water is still. The woman paddles quietly, while her husband stands up front, barbed spear at the ready. One lightning-quick thrust, and a struggling pike breaks the surface. Startled birds make a commotion. In seconds, the fisherman has tipped his catch into the canoe, where his wife swiftly kills it with a wooden club. The water is again calm, and the fishing continues. The story may be fiction, but this is no imaginary landscape. It is based on archaeological and climatic evidence gathered from the bottom of the North Sea. Today, a cold and often rough stretch of water separates Britain from continental Europe. But 9,000 years ago, when global sea levels were far below those of today, this was dry land. Known to geologists today as Doggerland, the area was only a few meters above sea level. For the most part, it was a waterlogged world, whose inhabitants spent much of their time afloat. We know details of this natural landscape from remote sensing, but we know little of the human inhabitants except for what we can glean from chance finds, such as bone harpoons dredged from the shallow seabed. We know these people were hunters and fisherfolk, for agriculture was still unknown. We also know that they lived in an ever-changing environment, so flat that a rise in the sea level of just a few centimeters could submerge canoe landings or campsites within a generation or even less. Doggerland finally vanished about 5500 BC, during a time of major global warming after the Ice Age. Thanks to archaeology, we know more and more about how people have adjusted to changes in the climate, both large and small. Whether small hunting bands in Doggerland or magnificent civilizations in danger of collapse during major drought. We live in a time of global warming, of climate change triggered by human activity, much of it since the 1860s. We archaeologists provide a long-term historical view of climate change, and this offers a unique background to today's concerns. Whether we like it or not, we are going to have to adjust to more frequent extreme weather events, such as hurricanes or droughts. We're like the long-vanished inhabitants of Doggerland, but on a global scale. Their small bands moved around in the face of rising sea levels, but the populations of today's big cities cannot do the same. Long before the million-person city, early civilizations were vulnerable to climate change. Ancient Egyptian civilization nearly collapsed because of failed Nile floods, caused by drought in 2100 BC. Fortunately, the pharaohs were shrewd enough to invest in extensive agricultural irrigation canals and grain storage facilities. Their civilization lasted for 2,000 more years. Meanwhile, great Maya cities descended into social disorder and chaos, in part because of major droughts. We learn from archaeology that vulnerability to climate change is nothing new. In this and many other ways, archaeology tells us a great deal about ourselves and how we face today's challenges, many of which are also nothing new. Archaeology has always been about people. What has changed is not the people, but the layers of evidence that we use to study them. We began purely as excavators, out for spectacular finds and sometimes knowledge. We preferred, for the most part, civilizations. Today, we're interested in everything from human origins to the Industrial Revolution and First World War trenches. Of course, we still excavate statues and buildings or an emperor's terracotta regiment. But we're just as comfortable in the laboratory studying pot fragments or animal bones, or discussing the religious beliefs of Maya rulers. Archaeology is being transformed by new technological methods, such as LIDAR, which can expose entire landscapes and sites deep under tropical forests. See Chapter 39. We've become so specialized that there is a tendency sometimes to forget the people. It is now rare to make a truly spectacular discovery, such as a richly decorated tomb. Tragically, archaeology's precious archives are vanishing before our very eyes. Archaeological sites everywhere are under threat from deep plowing, industrial development, and looters. Without being aware of it, thousands of tourists, fascinated by archaeological sites and the remains of ancient societies, are eroding the stones of the pyramids and of ancient Angkor Wat in Cambodia. At the same time, the terrorist organization ISIS, Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, and other criminals have deliberately destroyed ancient Palmyra and Nineveh with gunpowder and sold looted artifacts from ravaged museums. Fortunately, there are heroes too, communities that value their history and realize that they are stakeholders in the past. Archaeologists in several countries have joined forces with non-professionals who use metal detectors. This has resulted in impressive discoveries, including collections of Anglo-Saxon and Viking gold. Many commercial companies have also helped save sites threatened by their development plans. The Crossrail project, which is building an underground railway line across London, has paired archaeologists with tunneling contractors from the beginning. They have recovered more than 10,000 artifacts from over 40 worksites along the 100-kilometer line. Remarkable finds include 3,000 or so human skeletons excavated from underneath Liverpool Street Station, a major London terminus. Of these, 42 came from a single burial ground used during the Great Plague of 1665, the Black Death. 100,000 Londoners perished in the plague, which swept across Europe from the east. Victims died within days and sometimes within hours. They broke out in black rashes and often collapsed in the streets. At the time, no one knew what the killer disease was or where it had come from. The exact nature of the disease was still somewhat uncertain until the Crossrail researchers took DNA samples from the Liverpool Street victim's tooth enamel. These yielded traces of a type of bacteria associated with bubonic plague, which is spread by rats. The DNA settled once and for all what disease it was that had killed so many Londoners. Crossrail explored centuries of vanished London history. Elsewhere, other sites exposed by industrial activity and then excavated with the support of the company that discovered them tell of dramatic moments in the past. For example, some 3,000 years ago, a fire broke out in a small village lying in a marshy settling at Must Farm near Peterborough in eastern England's low-lying fenlands. The flames tore through the tiny fenced settlement built on stilts above the bog. The villagers fled the blaze, leaving everything behind them. Within minutes, five huts had slid into the water. This is when archaeology is at its best, a long-forgotten catastrophe that froze a moment in time, near perfect preservation conditions, in waterlogged ground and collapsed dwellings, where everything lies virtually unharmed. Thanks to the cooperation of a helpful brick quarry owner, the fascinating and tragic story could be pieced together. The site was so waterlogged that the archaeologists could sift through the wet mud and fine silt in huts that were preserved so completely that it was as though the researchers had simply walked into them. Parts of the wattle walls were still in place beneath traces of the collapsed roofs. Possessions lay on the floor and by the hearth, even clay pots with food still in them. There were traces of butchered lamb carcasses that once hung from the rafters. The hut owners had a fine array of bronze axes and swords, as well as bronze-tipped spears. Two were found still complete with their wooden shafts, a rare discovery. The mud perfectly preserved textiles made from the bark of lime trees. Some of the fibers were finer than human hair. This was a community that spent much of its time afloat. No fewer than 8 wooden dugout canoes have been found nearby. Must Farm is Britain's Pompeii. Some dramatic finds in recent years have revealed long-forgotten natural disasters. Seren, a Maya village in El Salvador, Central America, was buried by a volcanic eruption in about AD 580. The people had eaten their evening meal but had not yet gone to bed. They abandoned their houses and possessions to flee for their lives. American archaeologist Payson Sheets and his team have been working there since 1976. They have unearthed 2 houses, some public buildings, and 3 storehouses. The preservation is so good that they have recovered bean-filled pots, sleeping mats, and garden tools, either carbonized or preserved as casts in the ash. The eruption buried fields with young and mature maize plants and several fruit trees, including guavas. Like Herculaneum and Pompeii, Suresnes and Must Farm are places where we get up close and personal with the people of the past. And when all is said and done, that is the point of archaeology. Archaeology is about discovery, but discovery today means something very different from even a half century ago. We've traced the history of archaeology from its early days of antiquarians like John Aubrey, William Stukeley, and John Freer. Then came the early excavators, who dug up a jumble of artifacts from European burial mounds. Pompeii and Herculaneum yielded dramatic finds. General Napoleon Bonaparte's scientists made ancient Egypt fashionable in 1800. Jean-François Champollion deciphered hieroglyphs in 1822 and founded Egyptology. Then came the adventurers, like Paul-Émile Botta, Austin Henry Layard, Frederick Cotherwood and John Lloyd Stevens, and Heinrich Schliemann. These were the heroic days of archaeology, when archaeologists revealed unknown ancient civilizations. Meanwhile, Christian Jurgensen Thompson and J.J. A. Warsay brought some order to prehistoric times with the three-age system during the early 19th century. The era of adventuring and collecting began to fade in the 1870s with the German excavations at Olympia and Babylon. Slowly, archaeology ceased to be an amateur pursuit. In 1900, most archaeologists were men, but a small number of women were in the field, among them Gertrude Bell and Harriet Hawes. The early 20th century was a time of increasing professionalism and truly magnificent discoveries. Among them was the undisturbed tomb of Tutankhamun, opened in 1922. Leonard Woolley's excavations at Ur in Iraq were one of the last enormous classic digs. His clearance of the city's royal tombs rivaled the Tutankhamun excavation. By the 1930s, a growing number of professional archaeologists taught at colleges and universities. Slowly but surely, archaeology became global, not just confined to Europe and the Middle East. Gertrude Catton Thompson's excavations at Great Zimbabwe opened the world's eyes to early African states. Excavations at Pecos Pueblo put the archaeology of the American Southwest, and indeed of North America generally, on a scientific footing. We have traced the slow development of world prehistory, the debates over the first farming, and have joined the Leakeys and others as they searched for the first humans in East Africa. Archaeology has become an international undertaking where long-term, slow-moving projects tackle issues like sustainability rather than merely finding and dating sites. Excavation itself is no longer fashionable, as remote sensing has slowly come to fulfill the archaeologist's dream of being able to see underground without digging. Archaeology is still exciting. It's now highly technical. But that allows us to decipher the medical history of pharaohs and to establish from the tooth enamel of skeletons where people once were born and lived. Archaeology helps explain why we are similar and why we are different. It explains the ways in which we adapt. By looking backwards into the past, it helps us look forwards into the future. And every year, new discoveries and technical advances make it easier to peer over the shoulders of ancient people. Almost, sometimes, to talk to them. I remember standing on the ramparts of a 2,000-year-old hill fort in England one cloudy day. I closed my eyes and imagined the battle below in AD 43 between a Roman legion and the local inhabitants. The shouts of the attackers, the clash of sword on shield, the screams of the wounded. For a moment, I was a spectator. Then the vision faded, and I shivered in the gray chill. The past is around us for all to experience and enjoy, not only archaeologists. So when you next visit an archaeological site, let your imagination run wild. This has been an Audible Studios production of A Little History of Archaeology, written by Brian Fagan, performed by Kevin Scollin. Executive Producers Laura Gatchko and Mike Charzik. Producer, Neil Basic. Copyright 2018 by Brian Fagan. Sound recording copyright 2018 by Audible, Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible, Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.